Come Easy Go podcast, celebrating West Virginia people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Here's your host, Wayne Bennett.
Welcome to the Wayne Bennett podcast. My name is Wayne Bennett. This is episode number 43. It's November the 27th, and we'd like to give a big shout out to the Independence Patriots who qualified for the state championship finals in football next week at the on the island in Wheeling, and they beat Bluefield yesterday and quite a ball game, and congratulations and good luck next week. If you were around the Beckley area in the 60s and 70s, and you paid any attention to sports, you'd recognize the person that is our guest today, Albert Chubby Hughes. And welcome, Chubby.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure being here with you.
And Chubby, we've been friends a long time. Let's go back just a minute. How did you get the name Chubby?
Well, actually, my mother gave me that name at birth as Lucinda Boots Hughes. I was about almost 11 pounds. About wow. 11 pounds, and she named me Chubby, and it stuck.
And you've never been chubby after that, though, have you?
Never. If I've had a dollar for every time I'd had to explain that to people that see me, then I could retire in Florida or Bahamas or something.
Because well, let's talk about your mom and dad. I know your dad played ball down at Bird Prillman down at Amigo, and was your mom from that area?
Oh, yeah. Well, they were both from towns, but originally my dad's family was out of Appomattox, Virginia.
Really?
And they moved over to Alpoca, West Virginia, in Wyoming County. That's where he was born, and then moved to Tams.
Uh-huh.
My mother was from Martinsville, Virginia. They moved over into McDowell County, and my grandfather went into the coal mines, and then when she was 4 years old, they moved to Tams, West Virginia, in the same area where my dad was, and you know, in that small coal camp community.
When you were born, where did they live?
Beckley, West Virginia. They moved over here. My mother's people moved over here in the 40s, early 40s.
I see.
And actually, my dad married my mother in December of 1942. He had gotten drafted into the Army for World War II. He came home from basic training, and they were about to ship him overseas, and he married my mom. And, you know, and then, of course, they were reunited again to after the war, which was, you know, later on in the 40s.
Uh-huh. Now, so you grew up on Gregory Street.
402
East Beckley. Yeah. I know when we were younger, they ran a little store there on the corner of Hartley and Bostick, mm-hmm. and it's called Jerry's Grocery, a little right. small convenience store. Mm-hmm. Who was Jerry?
Jerry Edmonds actually is my first cousin, my mother's sister.
Oh, okay.
And he was quite an athlete at Stratton High School, but he was several years older than me. He was probably born in 1943, you know, somewhere. I think he graduated in 1960-61 from Stratton High School. But actually, they had a store in the Red Brush over across from Piney Oaks.
I see.
And now, I don't really know the real history of how it became Jerry's, but it just became Jerry's. It was another Jerry's Grocery. So, huh. You know.
And I know that, of course, we used to stop in there, and they had a pop machine that had water, cold water, that's one of the things of the past. But they Tyrone Lightning White lived yeah. right there beside of
right.
it.
You know,
the guy who played ball in Woodrow in the early 60s. And
Skipper Wright,
yeah,
you know, Skip Wright and Kenny Wayne, you know, they used to, you know, he went to Sylvia before I did,
uh-huh.
you know, because I didn't come to Sylvia until the seventh grade.
Let's talk about that. You went to East Beckley School. Mm-hmm. They called that Chicken Coop for a while. I don't know.
Well, That's what it was. It was affectionately called a chicken coop because they had a outbuilding, another building, another classroom, which was a tin building, and I guess somehow it was used as a chicken coop or something before they got it and, you know, renovated it and made it into an extra classroom. And so it got the name chicken coop.
Now, they didn't have any sports or anything.
Not at all.
There. No basketball or anything like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, how come you didn't go to Sylvia School?
Well, I think at the time it was just segregation. You know, it was all black school, which, you know, the blacks, you know, in my neighborhood went to and over, you know, but actually from like Canada Street back on over to to actually Gregory, because, you know, from Sylvia, which was Hartley now, and back over there, you didn't really have very few blacks. You had over on Hager, you had the Campbells, you had the Bordens, Lloyd Borden, you know, and Dennis, then on the back end of Bostick, down there before they got to your street, Klaus, you know, Dennis Borden, and Doris. And so it was, you know, it was just that isolated area. And then actually, I guess, true, Tom Coleman, he started East Beckley School in the first grade, right? Well, his grandmother who raised him, Miss Gwen Coleman, she was the secretary for the state NAACP. So I guess they were pushing integration during that time. And she sent true Tom Coleman to Sylvia in the second grade. And then, of course, they was on the same street with the Daniels, you know, NZ.
George Daniel.
Yeah, and Tim and, you know, all the boys, Donnie. You know, they had several, you know, brothers. And then Michael Jordan. You know, they were all right there on I Street, right across the street from each other. Uh-huh. And so they all, when integration started, you know, they went to Sylvia. Now, actually, before we got there, Rudy, you know, Raymond Coleman's brother, Rudy Coleman, was, you know, quite an athlete and a scholar. Integration happened, and he went to Sylvia. Now, his older brothers, after they left East Beckley School, they went to Morton Reeves.
Ah.
You see, you had schools that went to 1 through 6, and then if they was in the Red Brush, you know, I think they went to 8th grade over there. I don't know, it may not, but anyway, East Park, Stanford, and some of these outlying areas that had black students, they were bused to Stratton in the 7th grade.
I see.
And, you know, so Stratton actually went from the 7th to the 12th.
I didn't know that. Well, now, when you came to Sylvia, you had not played any organized basketball or anything like that.
Right.
But you had played Little League baseball, and that kind of takes us back again to the integration and segregation. You couldn't play in the Beckley Little League. From my understanding, your dad brought you over to Stanford for a couple of years or one year.
When I was 8 and 9, they had the black men over in Stanford and Lanark organized, you know, the kids, like from down in Lanark and Stanford, it was two teams, the Braves and the Indians, and we played each other.
You couldn't play the white kids.
No, but of course, years later, they started Route 41 right down here, Little League, you know, where the Hannahs and the Robinson, Ricky Robinson, some of these kids that were from Lanark and Stanford played in before they came to the Bay Roof. But, we really didn't have anywhere to play organized, and so that's where it really started. We played, you know, baseball right over here at Stanford, and then you could go to the Babe Ruth League after, you know, you turned 13.
So your dad then decided to take you to Sophia. Mm-hmm. Was there any other guys from Beckley that went to Sophia and played?
Well, actually, the 1 year, Tom Coleman registered where some of his relatives were from over around, I think, MacAlpham or, you know, around that area, which was an area which Sophia could, you know, pick from. you know, their area where kids would play in their little league, and they registered him living there, and I was registered living with my grandmother in Tams. And see, my dad worked in the coal mines with Albert Venere, who was the president of the Sophia Little League. And actually, at the time, they had trouble filling all the rosters, not enough kids, mm-hmm. you know, to have full rosters for every team. And so he encouraged my dad, said, well, let him stay over with your mother in the summer, you know, and sign up for the Sophia League. And that's how I got to play, Little League Baseball in Sophia.
And you had quite a career, I mean, as far as Little League career there. I know when you were 12, you guys went to the States and finished second mm-hmm. in the State Little League tournament.
Well, actually 11.
11.
When St. Albans beat us.
Okay.
Down in Sarita Canova in the state tournament. And then when I was 12, I think we got upset somewhere, you know, before we could get to the States.
Then you came to Sylvia in the seventh grade, and that's when you first played organized basketball, and that did quite well. When you were in eighth grade, I was with you. The team finished undefeated, won yeah. the town district tournament. I think I was the ninth or tenth man. We had to really win by a lot for me to ever see any action, but it was a good year.
Well, actually, that year, Wayne, we won a Shady Spring tournament out there against junior high
yeah.
team. Stoke won a Shady Spring junior high. And then we won the Hartford tournament. You know, they had a Hart Fund tournament up at the old rec building,
yeah.
which all the town district teams were in, you know.
Uh-huh.
And we won that. So, and of course, you know, I have beautiful memories of playing, you know, on the asphalt where it take us all over the county, Cranberry, Sylvia, you know.
But the season was from September to April.
yeah.
You know, a lot of times Mr. Sims, our coach and teacher, would let guys go out and shovel the basketball court in the wintertime to get a little practice in. You practice with gloves on and toboggans.
Yeah. If it wasn't raining or something stupid, you know, we was out there playing, whether we were supervised or not. But most of the time, Mr. Sims, especially in eighth grade, he was out there almost like a practice.
Yeah.
You know, supervising recess and lunchtime.
And then we got to, in youth football, mm-hmm. I played in when I was 11, and then when we were 12, they started allowing blacks to play in the Civitan League, and you played with us, the East Beckley team. And we had a good ball club, even though we'd had lost a lot of people from the year before, and I think we ended up in a tie for first place, or we might have been in first place. I don't know. I think Wes Beckley might have tied us a couple times, but you were you played halfback, and that was your first time playing organized football, and so you had a pretty good eighth grade year. I remember a quote that I got from you one time, and it said, "I know my parents shielded me a great deal from the bias and the racist events taking place, and being shielded wasn't always that bad." And even though with all the racism and the bias that was going on, you were fortunate. You had great parents that got you where you could participate and mm-hmm. encouraged you. And I mean, you know, so some people didn't have it quite as good.
Oh, absolutely not. You know, and when I look back on that, guys like yourself, Steve Licklider, and some of the other white folks, for lack of a better way to put it, you know, taught me that, you know, it was good people, that everybody wasn't racist, everybody wasn't bad, just because they was white or black or, you know, whatever their religion, their economic standing. That taught me, by being able to big with guys like yourself and Steve Lickline and even John Wooten and some of the guys that I met through my journey, you know, and my home training, you know, because I think racism and certain things like that is a learned thing. You know, you're not born with those biases. You learn those things by the people that you learn from or are associated with, you know, socially.
When we got out of the eighth grade, I guess you had a choice where you could go to Stratton High School or go to Beckley Junior High, which fed into Woodrow Wilson. Was that a hard choice for you? Or?
Well, no, because, you know, some of the guys I looked up was the Coleman brothers. Now, all those Colemans were outstanding athletes and scholars. You know, they were, you know, and so I looked up to them. So Rudy had already, you know,
on the wood, right?
Shown me a pathway, you know. But the factor that showed me to go finally, that they had cut out the baseball program at Stratton High School. Even before I got in the ninth grade, I think Manson Howard and some of them guys that was 15, a couple years older than we were in Babe Ruth, was some of the last guys that played baseball for Stratton High School. So they didn't have a high school baseball program, and I wanted to play high school baseball. So, and I saw Rudy and Tyrone and Bill Stone and some of the guys that had gone to Woodrow before integration. I mean, you know, the whole integration. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't, you know, you've had people to go to Woodrow prior to them consolidating Stratton and Woodrow, but it was very few.
Yeah.
And so I followed Rudy Coleman's footsteps.
Now, when you got to, of course, Beckley Junior High, you played football and basketball. And when you got to high school, that was when you had to run into your old teammates in baseball, the ones that you played with in down in Sophia. That they also, Joe Goddard and Neil Hawkins, Don Gibson, Pernesti, and all them guys. You had to play against them in the sectionals, usually the first or second game in a sectional.
Oh, you had to get out to advance. You have to. Well, actually, at that time, see, they didn't have in baseball. It wasn't a double A tournament or single A tournament. Everybody was in the same thing. So regardless of your classification, you played for one state championship when I was in high school.
Yeah.
So even if you know, no matter what your, and whether you were A, double A, or triple A, you know, you had to play.
So a lot of the sectionals and regionals were big. I mean, there was a bunch of teams.
You was a true state champion.
Yeah.
If you won it then, because everybody was in there. So you just didn't beat the double A schools or the triple A schools or the single A. Everybody had a chance.
I remember Kaiser had a real good program for a run at that time, I think. So you didn't get out of the section 2 out of the 3 years you were in high school.
Well, my sophomore year, we went to the States. My junior year, I think we got upset by Sophia, you know, that year. And then my senior year, I'm trying to think. We probably went to the regional, but we didn't get to the States. But the only year we got to the state was my sophomore year, my first year playing with J.W. McNish and Allie Smith and Blankenship and some of those guys. You know.
Then you got to play Babe Ruth baseball, and you played football in high school.
Yeah, I played my sophomore and my junior year, and it's something that it kind of bothered me. My junior year, well, Tom Coleman, it was, you know, just a few of us that was up there playing and going to school my junior year, and Tom broke his leg. We over at Sylvia playing satellite, broke his leg when we was just before we was going to the state tournament. Of course, you know, he was one of the top players in the Babe Ruth League for Erics.
Yeah.
And so he didn't get to play football his junior year because he had broken his leg. And so we was the state champions, you know, in Babe Ruth League. And we in Jersey, New Jersey, representing the state of West Virginia. And after the tournament was over, I come back to go out for the football team. And they actually weren't even in pads. They were just in shorts. Now, you know, how they, you know, the first week or so, you just be out there in shorts and it's pretty much conditioning down in the Dust Bowl, you know. And so I come out there and sit all day looking to get a uniform to play football. And he come out and told me after the day was over that the team voted to not to let me come out because I was late.
Yeah.
And so I didn't get to play my junior year. And so the only guys on the team then was Henry. He was a sophomore, so he didn't make a traveling squad. You know, he was on JV. And I think, let's see, Johnny Payne, I think, was probably the only player that was on varsity my junior year because he was 1 year ahead of me. And he wrestled, of course, and did a little track. But and I think my sophomore year they had David Snell. He had moved here from the city. His dad had a supervisor position, a management position over at Beckley Manufacturing. And when I was a sophomore, he was a senior. He played football. So it was, you know, I could just about name the guys of color that I played with until Stratton came. You know, and consolidated with Woodrow.
Now, in the meantime, your dad got out of the coal mines, mm-hmm. and was he the first black deputy sheriff, or was he Mr. Hanno?
No. It was a gentleman that stayed right there across from the store, Jack Towns. I think he was either was married to Mr. Eskew's daughter, or he, you know, had a relationship with her.
Uh-huh.
You know, and... Actually, he was the first, and Robert C. Byrd, when he got this, to be senator, he took him to D.C. with him, I guess, for security or, you know.
Yeah.
But he was the first. And then when Zina French became deputy sheriff after Oakie Mills was sheriff for forever, seemed like, and then they came up with the term limits around that time, and Zina French became the sheriff. And at that time, my dad became a deputy sheriff under Zina French. And then after that, Mr. Sherwood Brown and Buddy Hanna up here came in, you know, while his tenure with the Sheriff's Association. They became deputy sheriffs under Zina French. And then, before he quit, he actually became the president of the Raleigh County Deputy Sheriff's Association, my dad.
I see.
Well,
now, you were in the basketball. You went to, at Woodrow, you guys went to the state tournament every year that you were there. I remember the 10th grade when you guys had played Dunbar and the big Woodell and Walker and those guys.
Oh, yeah, Melvin Walker was Randy Moss before Randy Moss existed.
And then the junior year, you guys won it all.
Yeah.
And the senior year, you ran into Charleston, who was loaded, a lot of juniors. They had Curtis Price as senior, but they had a lot of good junior ball players, and they won about everything that particular year. But you mainly were coming off the bench most of the time and coming in the first guy in usually. And I know one time I read a quote from Lawrence Wiseman, and he was talking about you, and he said, he ought to be starting, but he's so valuable coming into the game off the bench because he can play any position that we leave him as the number six guy. And that, even though everybody wants to be a starter, that was quite a compliment, actually.
Yeah.
But then when you were going to graduate, you wanted to play college basketball and baseball, which was even rarer back then. And you played on the American Legion team with the Sophia guys and Scotty Cuthbert. I think he was a Stoko boy. But then you and Licklider, David Cassidy, and you guys won the state championship.
Mm-hmm.
And you went to New Jersey.
Yeah, New Jersey.
But there was four of you and Kent Martin, Joe Goddard, and Steve Licklider.
and J.C. Jones.
That went to Marshall?
Went to Marshall.
Really?
J.C. Jones, the leadoff hitter. I think he had the highest average, and he still every base that wasn't tied down. I mean, he was a tremendous baseball player. I mean, you can ask Joe Wayne and
everybody. Well, I remember J.C.
J.C. was a tremendous baseball
player. Jack Cook, who just passed away. Did you see that a couple of days ago?
I did see that.
And he recruited, so he had five of you from the same area. That's unusual.
Yeah, same team.
But when you got to Marshall, it didn't work out. You was wanting to play basketball and baseball. It didn't quite work out.
Mm-hmm.
What happened there?
Well, actually, what happened is Marshall did not give full scholarships in baseball. So now Steve Lickline, he was the first team All-State basketball player, right? And so now what they did, they took a full basketball scholarship and split it up between Steve and I, you know, and then the partial baseball scholarship that covered all the bases to give us a full ride. But see, they didn't realize that, hey, we felt like, both of us felt like that we could play college basketball. And so they had all baseball practice. Now, back then, Division I, which was, Mack was in a Division I school, and, you know, you couldn't play varsity athletics, I don't care how good you were. Now, the next year, in 1969, when Mike D'Antoni come out of Mullins, they changed that rule. Of course, they had Ty Collins out of New Jersey, who was a high school All-American, you know, great basketball player. They changed that, you know, that if you were good enough.
That was NCAA.
NCAA ruling, yeah. And so we would go to fall baseball practice, you know, as freshmen. And then at about 8 o'clock that night, we went and practiced with the freshmen basketball team, because we both loved to play and wanted to play. And but like the first week, it was just pretty much conditioning, no scrimmaging, no, you know, just running and like suicides and just pretty much conditioning. And after the end of the first week, we come in there and it was a cut list up. Well, Steve and I, you know, we're both on the list. Well, of course, we both took exception to it, and right away, Steve, you know, decided that he was leaving Marshall because, you know, that they didn't want him to play basketball. So he transferred after the first semester at Marshall and went to Morris Harvey. And they actually put me back on the team, okay? So I played and scrimmaged, and sure enough, I end up being the point guard on the freshman basketball team with Russell Lee, who, of course, was a first-round pick by the Bucks when he graduated from Marshall, you know, from Boston.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I actually played a little bit, you know, of a freshman basketball. And then, man, as luck would have it, they had freshman baseball, but it was crazy, man. Every one of our games, freshman games, were rained out. Now, had I played probably one game of baseball, Marshall, I probably would have stayed there.
And they didn't even make them up either.
But, man, listen, when I left there, when you start adding on the years that I thought I should be playing, because the worst thing you could have did to me at that time was not let me play.
Yeah,
because that was my love. I mean, I don't care if it was football, baseball, basketball. I'm gonna go out there and I'll play with you all day long as you want to.
Want to play?
Yeah.
Now you went to, you ended up going to West Virginia State, mm-hmm. Cal Bailey.
Yeah.
And who was the basketball? Art Burris.
Burris was the basketball coach. Actually, when I first came to state, Cal Bailey was playing for the Charleston Charlies, the AAA affiliate of the Pirates, but he had played at state, right? And so he would come down and just be around practice and train, you know, in the gym, you know, throwing and just kind of helping out a little bit while he was still trying to pursue his, you know, his major league career. But he was probably 30 or so, or close to 30, if not 31 or 2, when he was still at the AAA level. And then I guess he finally hung it up, and then some years later became the head coach at West Virginia State and had a spectacular coaching career.
Oh, I know. He was actually, my son played for him, yeah. Was on the team,
yeah.
One year down there. He had a great, great, great career there. And but you were able to play basketball and play baseball in college all the way through. What kind of degree did you get, or did you get a degree?
I did. I have a BA degree in political science, a double minor in economics and history.
And what were you going to do with that?
Well, actually, I had planned to go to law school, you know, but I had gotten married before I finished my last years at school, and got a job at Monsanto, you know, and I said, well, I'm going to sit out a year and I'll go back to school. Well, that's been 50 years. So now that a second child came, you know, my daughter was born in June of 72. And like I say, a year or two went by, and then I had another daughter. And then now it was just about, yeah, that whole mindset changed. It's about trying to keep a job and take care of my family.
So you ended up in around Atlanta, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I Tom Cone, he was with IBM, and he got a promotion to Atlanta with IBM. And I went down to visit him, and I just decided that, you know, I wanted to try somewhere else, you know, because actually, as things would have it, the government and the policies they was having during that time kind of forced Monsanto to hire black people, and I was one of the first black people hired at Monsanto down there at Nitro. And I really wasn't promotable. They wouldn't promote me. I just had an hourly job. I worked in a lab running chemical analysis for 5 years down there for Monsanto. And then I decided I want to try to use my degree to go somewhere else and seek opportunity. And that's how I end up going to Atlanta, because Tom Coleman, one of my best friends in life, and still is, you know, he had transferred there, and I went to visit him, and the rest is history.
How did you end up back in Beckley?
My sister, Pam, you know, Pam mm-hmm. Hughes Moore, who was, you know, a co-worker with you up at Park Junior High in the same room for over 40 years teaching math up there, and she lost her son, Nate, and she called me, and she said, you know, you ought to think about coming back home, because she didn't ask me to. She said, you ought to think about it, because she did everything for my mom and all the good older folks in the neighborhood, you know, and she just had to just leave some of that alone so that she could try to learn to deal with losing a child. And it was a no-brainer.
No, absolutely.
And when she said, you ought to think about it, she didn't say, would you? Or anything like that. Hey, I wrapped up my business and I come home.
Now, you graduated from high school when you were 17, mm-hmm. which was young. Mm-hmm. Would you like to have that extra year in high school?
Well, listen, if I did, I don't think it would have been fair. At 18, you know, given the skill level I thought I had at the time, and then another year of maturity, man, you know, it's a difference, you know.
Absolutely.
As you go up in competition and you mature, and your confidence level, you know, start moving more toward manhood, you know what I mean? And you know, you're dealing with kids that's younger that don't have the experience you got, the confidence that you've, you know, generated. And it's just an advantage to have. That's just like the red shirt, to give you another year of maturity and understand what it takes.
Absolutely.
To be successful at that level.
What's on your bucket list? You're 71 years old. You're working still yet, which is admirable, of course. But what's something that Chubby Hughes would like to do that he hadn't done?
I don't know, Wayne. It's not a whole lot. It don't take very much for me anymore. I haven't done a lot that a whole lot of people have done, but I haven't been cheated. I've done a lot of things and where I've lacked in some areas, I was very rich in the things that count, in the very good friends I was able to make, you know, that this tried and true, you know, I mean, just years of, you know, friendship and good people. So I was filthy rich in that regard. And the neighborhood I grew up in, the values that I was able to learn from the Penixes, the Comans, and everybody over in East Bethlehem, you know, in our little section of town. Even, you know, going to Sylvia and having my horizons expanded, you know, because yeah, it was like playing with people that looked like me. Then it was a new experience to go into school and then have to learn how to, you know, understand and deal with people from another ethnicity. So it was, you know, but it was like broadening my horizon and letting me know that what I saw on TV sometimes, when you saw ABC or NBC or CBS, and you see the South and the struggle, that was the civil rights struggle and dogs and that thing and, you know, that sort of thing that was going on, Jim Crow. And then you come back and you realize that everybody's not like that.
Yeah.
You don't just sit there and say because, you know, he's this or that, that everybody's like that, just like that. Because, you know, I'm certainly a believe that really there's only one race in this world, and that's the human race.
Mm-hmm.
When you start trying to break it down any further than that, then that's when you get into the biases and the discrimination, whether it's economic, whether it's religious, whether it's your sexual identity. That's when you get into the problems, the prejudices.
I agree. Well, Chubby, you certainly have been a pathfinder, and I appreciate you coming by. We've got a lot more to talk about. You got to come back.
Oh, I will.
And because we haven't even covered near what I'd like to cover, but we've kind of out of time today. But if you promise me you'll come back, I do appreciate talking to you and seeing you again. Always considered you a friend. Always will.
Well, that's the same with me. I mean, like I say, you're one of the sterling examples of good people. You know, and I don't put it any further than that. You are a human being, and you don't look at people from my perspective as how much money they have, you know, who they mom and dad are, or what their religion is. You go on their character.
That's right.
You like them for who they are, or you don't.
There you go. Listen, anybody out there that would like to be on the show, you can contact me at awbennett50@gmail.com. Check us out on Facebook. We're also on Google, Spotify, Podomatic. And be sure to like us and follow us. It kind of helps our ranking in the podcast system, and we appreciate it. Until next time, remember, if you ain't dead yet, you're not done yet. And God bless you.